to another edition of Radio New Bloom, this time coming to you live from the Red Room. Once again, my name is Garrett D.
And I'm Brian Hugh.
So today we're sitting down with the leading members of Indivisible Taiwan. They are Mary Goodwin, Helen Ye, and Teresa Lynch Lin. Mary Goodwin is also a professor of American literature at National Taiwan Normal University. Helen Ye is a Taiwanese-American editor and publisher. And Teresa is an expat who's been living in Taiwan on and off for about 15 years now. We're very happy to have you with us.
Thanks. Thank you. Glad to be here.
So our first question for our interview is about the founding of Indivisible. For people that might not know, could you talk about the founding of the Indivisible movement in America, as well as how Indivisible began in Taiwan?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me just start with how Indivisible got started, as I understand it. So there were a few citizens who, just after the election, were unhappy about some of the things that were going on, and they wanted to become active. And there was a group at the same time of former staffers who'd worked for senators, and they had seen how the Tea Party movement had really changed politics in America. You may be familiar with the Tea Party movement, are you?
Yeah? Oh yeah, for sure.
Right, right. So the staffers, they studied what the Tea Party leaders had done and how they had been very effective at making change with just a few people, actually. It seemed like there was an army of Tea Partiers, but in fact there weren't that many. And they became very vocal. They did things like their tactics were kind of almost forgotten in American politics. They went and talked directly to legislators. They went to town hall meetings with signs. They protested actively in places where they could get media attention. And they really shifted American politics. And they did that very rapidly. And their approach was they wanted to stop the Obama agenda from having any forward movement. So their entire perspective was oppositional. So that's how the Tea Party worked, right? And these staffers, Senate staffers, following the election of Trump, knew that there was going to be a need to get active against the Trump agenda. So they formed Indivisible. They created a handbook, and they simply put in that handbook what had worked for the Tea Party and were advising anyone who was anti-Trump agenda to get together and to use these methods. So as soon as the handbook was published, the very next day, there were just three people who took that handbook and they went to their legislator and they had a meeting and they used the exact tactic from the handbook by being civil and polite in the discussion that they had with the legislator. They were organized, and they also brought media with them. And they affected change that day. So from that day, because the press was there, Rachel Maddow, you might know her from MSNBC, she picked up the story, and she ran the story. She ran the story that night, and it was, you know, an impassioned story, as you know Rachel can do. And then Indivisible, the wave began. And from that very small beginning, now we have over 5,000 small groups of people calling themselves Indivisible. It's not a centrally organized group, working locally to make change. So it's a very powerful movement, and we're glad to be a part of it.
So talking about the way it got organized and some of the tactics that are being used then, can you talk about the way that it started in Taiwan? What were some of the challenges that you faced in organizing Indivisible? And what kind of activities do you have that are still ongoing at the present?
Well, in Taiwan, we came together first around the time of the Women's March in Washington following Trump's inauguration. We noticed that there was no march planned for Taiwan, so very quickly on social media, we called together a lot of people who brought signs to the CKS Memorial, raised the signs, took pictures, and so on and so forth. And then I thought it would be a one-off kind of meeting, but it turns out that people had so much energy and so much rage, really, so much outrage, at what was happening that they felt the need to do something. And there were a lot of people who had never really been political before. Even I mean, I follow politics, I vote, I donate, but I had never marched, I had never written a postcard to my congressman, I had never called anyone to express my anger. And since that moment, since the first Women's March in January, January 23rd in Taiwan, I think we've been together, we've been working on some action every single week. And it could be postcards to support Democratic candidates in vulnerable districts. Right now we have a postcard campaign underway for John Ossoff in Georgia's 6th District and for Rob Quist in Montana. Later there will be something coming up in South Carolina. And as you know, there are numerous fronts in which we need to make our voices heard, environmental, in terms of women's reproductive issues, healthcare. Even today, we are planning a kind of impromptu flash protest against the repeal of Obamacare. We call it a die-in, and we want to make a strong contrast with the reasonable and humane policy of Taiwan to protect citizens' healthcare. So the die-in will be for the Americans, whose leaders don't seem to care whether they live or die. And the live-in will be for Taiwan, which is already, you know, light years ahead of America in terms of social safety net. And Helen has organized the March for Science, which is one of the events that we follow in addition to postcard writing and call-in campaigns.
Yeah, the March for Science was a march held by scientific communities and its allies around the world on Earth Day, April 22nd, to protest Trump's attempts to suppress funding for research and climate change. And here in Taiwan, rather than doing a physical march, members of the Indivisible team, including myself, Lisa Garrick of Sea Taiwan, Jane Wong, and John Fan of Pickle Lodge, showed solidarity with the movement by organizing events to raise awareness about climate change and environmental preservation. As we thought this would be more effective and invite greater participation amongst expats and Taiwanese people.
So that might be a good segue into the next question, which is regarding Indivisible's role in Taiwan. In particular, Indivisible has American members, it also has Taiwanese members. And so in that respect, some of Indivisible's actions have been addressing the US and some Taiwan. And I also know that Indivisible has partnered with Taiwanese local organizations at different points as well. So how do you understand Indivisible's role as in Taiwan as being then?
For the most part, Indivisible in the United States is focused with laser precision on electing Democratic candidates. So in Taiwan, because we can't attend town halls, because we are remote from the center of power, and because we're in Taiwan for a good reason, there is a lot here to admire, a lot that America could learn from. So we do our best to kind of work together on issues that affect the global community. So Helen's March for Science and related activities, for example, the Women's March and so on. So we try to kind of intersect with local groups. For the Women's Day March on March 8th, Crystal Liu, who's a local activist and feminist, really did the lion's share of the work for that. She arranged for local legislators to show up, and she got permits for our march and so on. So we do try to contribute at every moment that there is an issue that affects us globally, and so that would be environmental, women's issues, and so on and so forth. But for the most part, I think our week-to-week effort is trained on getting Democrats elected in the states.
It's interesting that you bring up Crystal Liu. I actually sat down with her after the Women's March, and we talked about the motivation behind that event. And as what she was telling me is that while the organization focuses a lot on issues surrounding particularly the election of Donald Trump and the impact that it's had, the Women's March was also focused a lot on Taiwanese issues as well. However, given the current political environment, especially after the Trump-Tsai phone call that really made a lot of waves, issues affecting Taiwan and issues affecting the Trump administration are really closely linked. How do you see your actions opposing these policies of the current U.S. administration as relating to Taiwan and having an impact on Taiwan?
I think following the Thai phone call, there were a lot of us who were deeply skeptical of Taiwan people's potential interest or appreciation of Trump, you know, reaching out. I think that a lot of us who were skeptical about him thought that Trump acts on impulse, that there was no real thought or plan behind his phone call. And since then, I think Trump's actions have borne us out. He has become good friends, as he said, with Xi Jinping. And the most recent thing I read is that he would contact Xi to give him direction on any future contact with Taiwan. So, you know, Taiwan people don't bet a lot on Trump, I would say. As for Taiwan itself, I think we do our best to stay clear of local political issues. Like I said, I think there are many cases where we have global concerns in common: treatment of women, abuse of women, equal pay, environmental issues, down the list. But in general, we cannot really interfere. We don't have the right. We don't have the power of voting. We don't really have a political interest in making specific changes in Taiwan.
It's not a part of the purpose of Indivisible to interfere with local matters, political matters.
Yeah. Okay. So along those lines, then, what have been the challenges of working in Taiwan? I mean, among Indivisible chapters, I mean, that is, I think, probably quite unique. And in general, what do you think are the difficulties of organizing in the present political climate globally in Taiwan and in the United States?
You know, I would say, anytime you're trying to organize to get people to talk about politics is difficult, right? Because the way that I was brought up and the way that a lot of folks were brought up, you don't talk about politics, you don't talk about religion, you don't ask a woman what her age is, right? I mean, there's kind of taboo subjects, right? So the first thing that I think we have to kind of get over is we have to say, wait a minute, why can't we talk about this stuff? This is important. Right? I mean, this is not just important in this moment in history. This is incredibly important for the future, you know, not just the future 4 years down the road. I mean, Trump, what he's doing will have an impact on our lives and our children's lives and who knows after, right? This is a time not to sit back and say, you know, well, good manners prevailing. I'm just going to kind of keep my opinions to myself. Well, no, I don't think so. Let's actively engage in some discourse. So, you know, I think that's a hurdle to get over. And then I think there's the other hurdle just here locally for a lot of expats I've talked to. They feel that they're here away from it, you know? They're in this bubble, and they're kind of happy to be in the bubble, right? And I don't blame anyone for that. I want to turn off my CNN. You know, I get a little sick sometimes when I look at my phone and it's popping up one bad story after another, after another, after another. It's easy to say, I just want to put my head in the sand and I want this all to go away. But, you know, what I say to that is we can't do that. We cannot sit back and let this man and the people that are behind him take over our world. I think those are two of the main issues, you know, that we've dealt with in trying to get this group together. Having said that, though, we've found that there are people who are willing to write some postcards and make some phone calls and do some things that they're really uncomfortable with and that they've never done, including myself. This is the first time I've ever done this. But I find this is a moment in time where we have to do it. Yeah.
So you did talk a little bit about being far removed from that, about being part of an international community that maybe is not quite at the epicenter of these issues, but that do still care about these issues. And a lot of us, I think, also have this idea that people who live abroad, expats, are in general mostly anti-Trump and anti the kind of policies that he stands for. However, there are some people who live abroad who are supportive of him, who are Trump supporters. What has the reaction, if there has been any, been to Indivisible from any kind of Trump supporters in Taiwan?
Well, I'll tell you, I just was at an event this morning, kids event at a school, and my husband, he knows how active I am, he knew that I was coming here this afternoon, and I was introducing him to some expat gentlemen who were there, and you know, I was really happy to have my husband chatting with those guys, and one of the men admitted that he's a Trump supporter. And thankfully, my back was to the fella, because I think my eyes would have just bugged out. But yeah, so he said, you know, I'm just really tired of all these people moping about the loss. They just need to get over it. They lost, right? And I feel like that attitude is like, wait, I think we're all losing. So there are Trump supporters amongst us, and I've been, you know, I'm as surprised as anybody when I meet them. So that's my reaction. I don't know about you guys. Mary, how do you feel?
Well, I think it's significant that the Democrats abroad have a presence in all the countries in the world. Republicans do not have a similar similar organization. So I must say, maybe it is because I live in my bubble, but I don't really run into that many Trump supporters. I did, however, a couple of weeks ago participate in a nonpartisan voter registration at the American School here. And we did not push our Democratic agenda, but we did run into people who said that they voted Republican or identified as Republican. But I don't think that's necessarily a barrier to resistance to Trump. I think there are plenty of conservative, fiscally conservative Republicans who are human beings, who do not want to strip healthcare from 24 million Americans, who do not want to see science cut, who do not want to see our reputation abroad dragged through the mud. So we can work with Republicans. Trump supporters, I'm not so sure I can work with them as easily because I think we might share completely different values. But I'm very happy to say that I haven't met many of them, although there are members in my own family recently unfriended on Facebook who are Trump voters.
So then what is next for Invisible down the line? What are future actions planned, and you know, what is hoped for to come out of these actions building further?
Right now we have a couple of candidates that we want to support as much as we can. So in Georgia, which is Teresa's district, and we are really, really grateful that she knows the streets, she knows the people there, she knows what will move them. So we're trying to get John Ossoff elected. That election is in June. In the meantime, Rob Quist, a Democrat in Montana, has a chance, apparently, against the Republican Gianforte, and we're trying our best to contribute postcards to that campaign. But I think, and then after that, apparently, South Carolina has a seat that's up for grabs. So we're going to follow as closely as we can the elections coming up, try to support them, and other actions as well. I mean, the budget, for example, the budget that's been approved short term, the fight over health care in the Senate coming up. I mean, there is no shortage of issues to become outraged about, no shortage at all. And we're going to be there for every single one.
I also wanted to mention that aside from the postcard writing and the events that we've organized, we also have weekly wine and wine parties, which is where people get together and they drink wine and they call their representatives back in the States. And also, we have a book club where we stay informed about the various issues that are happening right now. So these are all separate things that Indivisible members have organized over the months. And sometimes I think it's a bit overwhelming for people to look at the news and try to figure out, they feel helpless, they don't know what to do, but they want to do something. So part of the purpose of Indivisible in Taiwan is to make it easier for people to act by providing calling scripts. For instance, if you want to call your local rep, you don't have to cold call. We'll give you a script, we'll give you the numbers to call, the person to call. Also, you know, we're a community, so it's not an organization, there is no hierarchy. We're just a group of people with a common purpose, and the more people who participate, the stronger we become, and the louder our voices become. So one of our biggest goal, I think, is to give people a chance to act. That's the whole purpose of Indivisible.
Yeah, that's really nice. I like that wine and wine, and that's W-H-I-N-E, right?
Exactly.
What a clever name.
And that's every Thursday, usually.
Very nice. So yeah. Sounds like some good things down the pipe for Indivisible, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any closing words or remarks for our listeners? Anything else that you would like to let them know before we close?
Anybody who's interested in joining us in a big or a small way can find us on Facebook. There's an Indivisible Taiwan Facebook page. We have Twitter, like a Twitter account as well. If you'd like to see what we're up to, follow our posts, or join us in some way. I want to say, though, finally, that I've been teaching American literature in Taiwan for a long, long time, but the words of Thomas Jefferson in that we aim to create a government of the people, by the people, and for the people has never been so meaningful to me as it is this past 3 or 4 months, that we really are trying to stand one nation indivisible with liberty and justice for all. It's not a cliche anymore. It's real life.
Okay then, so thank you. Thank you to Indivisible Taiwan for being our guests for this session, this special live session of Radio New Bloom. So we're your hosts, Ryan Hugh.
And I'm Garrett Dee, and we thank you all for listening. We'll see you again next time.
Thank you. Like一夜情包丁感情